Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Red Ice TV. It's great to have you all with us today. And we are going to take a deeper look today at George Herbert Walker Bush, who passed away this Friday, actually. I was actually out of the studio. I was out traveling a little bit, so I couldn't cover it until now. But a very interesting history that this guy has had, of course. Big ties, as you know, to he started out, actually, in the United Nations. He was an ambassador to the United Nations. Later, he was an ambassador to China. He went on to be the CIA director, big-time influencer in the CIA. Apparently, he cleaned that up, and he became Reagan's vice president, and then later he became the 41st president of the United States, of course. And even when Boy George, his son, became president, becoming the 43rd president, many people kind of speculated that it was basically George Sr. by proxy that was steering George W. Bush's presidency. But we've seen nothing but positive mainstream media coverage of this man in the last few days of the weekend here. And we're going to look at a different side of this, of course, and talk about all the bad deeds that George Herbert Walker Bush has done, all the lies, and just how connected he is to not only the New World Order, but to the globalists and the establishment overall. And with us today, back on the show to help us to break this down, I guess that's a good term, help us to break all this down, is Adam Green from No More News. It's great to have you back again, Adam. Thank you so much for returning to the show.
Thank you, Henrik. It's a pleasure to be here. I haven't covered Bush Sr.'s death yet either, so I'm honored to be here to share that most noteworthy thing from George Bush's life here with your audience. So thanks for having me.
Of course. Awesome. Exactly. And there's just so much to go through. And actually, one of the first articles that I took a look at was out of Politico, and very, very toned down, very nice one. But it's like one of the only ones that questioned a little bit. Was like asking, is history being too kind to George Herbert Walker Bush? And they go through some of the more mellow things. They certainly don't go into the deeper kind of aspects of it. But, I mean, this is a major topic, Adam, to just kind of try to wade through, because the guy had a super eventful life. He had his fingers in every single pie, from the CIA to foreign policy to, you know, secret societies, skull and bones. He was...
He's in the Hall of Fame, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's way up there in terms of, like, being one of the representatives of, like, the conspiracy, if you know what I mean. So it's kind of a little bit difficult to know even kind of where to begin. But we did kind of outline a couple of things, which we thought, at least. And I'm sure we'll forget something, so maybe people can drop what we forget or something in the comments and help to remind us a little bit about what he actually did. But how do you, just as an overview, I guess, how do you view the guy, and how should we remember him?
We should remember him with dishonor, and he's one of the most well-known figures in the New World Order and the whole New World Order conspiracy. And just in the last few years, we've lost Brzezinski, Rockefeller, McCain, and now Bush Sr. If Soros and a couple Rothschilds go, you might actually get me to believe that Q might actually be real. All of the oligarchs, or many of the oligarchs, start going down.
You know, so, yeah, actually, RT, I think it was, has said, George Herbert Walker Bush introduced us to the New World Order. Now it's dying with him. And I wish that was true, because, as we know, these guys are just representatives. They're even, how do we put them, like PR men. They certainly pull strings, certainly influential. But they are not the node points in the conspiracy. There are many other people. There are probably people we don't even know the names of, Adam, that's working behind the scenes. But what we're getting is like front men like this, you know?
They're the CEOs, and then there's the shareholders that are above them, the true puppet masters.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess one of the first things we can talk a little bit about is the Iran-Contra affair. This is a big one. In terms of some of the damage that he did, and in terms of basically exposing how they operate behind the scenes, it was basically a way for Reagan officials at that time secretly selling arms to Iran in order to fund the Nicaraguan Contras, right? It was like this whole pretty complicated situation, but weaved into that you had everything with the drug war and you know, George Herbert Walker Bush was one of the guys who used this all the time. He did speeches about how horrible it is with drugs and stuff like that. We have to stop it, etc. But as people like us know, The government is like one of the biggest drug pushes there are, including the war in Afghanistan extended in such a way that the Taliban had actually control over the poppy production, right? The poppy fields and stuff. It was actually when America went back into Afghanistan after 9/11, the production started going up again. And this seems to be how they do business, right? They tell us one thing externally that like, oh, we're gonna do this, we're gonna stop drugs or whatever, and then it turns out the government are basically just taking out the competition and upping the ante.
Yeah, and Gary Webb exposed with the pilot Barry Seal was, they just had the recent movie with Tom Cruise, the whole MENA, Arkansas, cocaine smuggling while they were launching the war on terror, and they were flooding the streets, which Rupert, there was a famous 9/11 truther, Rupert said in a L.A. To some politicians. Yeah, and then there was the pardons,
yep.
And the whole his buddy Oliver North, and this is while he was the director of the CIA, and then he was the VP under Reagan, all under his watch.
I mean, it's amazing. Yeah, the defendants, Elliot Abrams, a former Assistant Secretary of the State for Central America, former National Security Advisor Robert McFarlane, former CIA officials Dwayne Claridge, Alan Fears, Claire George, and former Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberg, they are the dudes that were pardoned, basically. And obviously, this was done to protect Bush himself, right? So that no one could come along and be, weaved into kind of any legal proceedings and basically exposing that George Bush was one of the guys behind it. Pretty amazing stuff.
Absolutely.
And then you have presidents that have this ability, too, by the way, just to pardon. That's a big tell-all right at the end of their presidency. And, you know, Bill Clinton did this. I'm sure Trump will do this, too.
He already has. It was just in the news this week with Epstein, the labor secretary that Trump appointed. I can't remember his ascot or something like that. He was the one that got Epstein off with like a slap on the wrist. And it's because of all the Trump connections with Epstein, having all the numbers in the black book, having dinner, saying that they're, you know, he's a great guy. He likes young girls like I do. So it's not a surprise that Trump's guy helped cover that up.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? Why don't we take a look at that just to kind of get people started on the right foot? Obviously, George Herbert Walker Bush, he did one of these famous, he did multiple famous New World Order speeches. And some of them even were done, or one of them, I should say, was done on September 11th, 1991. So 10 years later to the day, we had, of course, the World Trade Center attack and the collapse and everything over there. But let's just take a look at that clip, and that can kind of introduce people a little bit to how he ran business when it came to the New World Order. So let's check that out.
Out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order can emerge, a new era, freer from the threat of terror, stronger in the pursuit of justice, and more secure in the quest for peace. An era in which the nations of the world, East and West, North and South, can prosper and live in harmony. 100 generations have searched for this elusive path to peace, while 1,000 wars raged across the span of human endeavor. And today that new world is struggling to be born. A world quite different from the one we've known. A world where the rule of law supplants the rule of the jungle. A world in which nations recognize the shared responsibility for freedom and justice. A world where the strong respect the rights of the weak. We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order. A world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders. What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order, where diverse nations are drawn together in common cause to achieve the universal aspirations of mankind, peace and security, freedom, and the rule of law. Such is a world worthy of our struggle and worthy of our children's future. Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is a very real prospect of a new world order. In the words of Winston Churchill, a world order in which the principles of justice and fair play protect the weak against the strong. A world where the United Nations, freed from Cold War stalemate, is poised to fulfill the historic vision of its founders.
Yeah, so very interesting, of course, because he talks obviously like a globalist, first of all, and he's talking about diverse nations coming together and sharing a destiny and everything becoming the same, ruling under one kind of universal...
Peace.
It's like it's it's kind of, in a way, it's like wrapped in New Age ideology to a certain extent, right? But these are the big globalist honcho dudes that are like have this vision of like, let's remove all these petty nations and let's just have a big world government that's going to regulate everything, and it will be peace. It will be world peace. That's how they bring the message, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the three pillars of the New World Order are one world government, one world religion, and a one world currency, and that aligns with the Judeo-Christian end times prophecies with the Christian Zionists.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, many people, you know, they claim that these guys are fascists, and in some cases, when it comes to Skull and Bones, that's accusations that it was basically it's all kind of not based in Nazism, or that they had Nazi regalia and things like that. But
like the Jim Mars Fourth Reich stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, if you listen to him, what he says, and sure, I understand that you can't just take at face value what he says. Sometimes they use language to manipulate you. I understand that. But if we are to take him at face value, he kind of sounds like a neoliberal globalist as opposed to like a national socialist, right?
You know, he's calling for a world government with world peace, and that aligns with a lot of the stuff that the first prime minister of Israel was talking about, and that we're seeing right now. The Sanhedrin and the people in Israel that want to rebuild the temple want to have a new UN that's ran by in Jerusalem. We'll get into those links.
Exactly. Let's talk about that later. But that's interesting because he did say what was the word he used exactly? Legitimate? I'm trying to look it out in my notes here. But a credible, that's the word. A credible United Nations, he said, implying that, of course, he was on the inside. He started as an ambassador for the United Nations. So he would know if he would deem it unworthy, I guess, of the missions that it's tasked with. But it seems that many are not happy with the United Nations because it doesn't really align on every point with, like, the Zionist agenda, for example, right?
Right, yeah. Israel claims, and the United States claims, that the UN has an anti-Israel bias and that they're anti-Semitic. So they want to get out of the UN. Netanyahu has called for a new UN for the Internet, where he wants Israel to be in charge because he says they're the most advanced at cybersecurity. And because of Israel, we pulled out of UNESCO. We pulled out of the UN Human Rights Council. Yeah, there's up on the screen, Israel and the Unexpected New World Order. So is this the New World Order that George Bush Sr. was referring to?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It could be. They don't... Of course, don't get me wrong, I don't like the United Nations in its current form either. I think even a revamping of it probably would be even worse. But currently, the United Nations is definitely run more by socialists. Even the current head that's heading it up it was actually a president for Socialist International prior. You know, it's the idea of an international movement to kind of an international workers movement. But, you know, we know that that's kind of code for, like, Bolshevism and internationalism.
Well, it was set up by Rockefeller and Bush was involved, and Kissinger, the Trilateral Commission.
Mm-hmm.
They're all tied in with the UN. The UN is on Rockefeller, donated the land. And Bush was a Rockefeller Republican.
Exactly, and that's a good point, too. One of the classic kind of points people go for conspiracy is the Council on Foreign Relations, of course. And they, you know, he's their boy. He did their bidding, and they just poured out appreciation notes and articles about how lovely this guy was, because he was a true internationalist, and he was doing their bidding. He, in terms of where the world needed to go on the terms of foreign policy, He did all these things that many of these globalist institutions want to see the world go, right?
And continued on with his son also.
Absolutely, and that's what I said. You know, some people speculated that it was kind of he ruled by proxy. Now, what's interesting with George Herbert Walker Bush is he only got one term, and then Bill Clinton got in afterwards. But we've seen the relationship between the Bushes and the Clintons, and even the Obamas to a certain extent, has been super solid. And although that they have kind of posed, I guess, as ideological enemies, they seem very much on the same page. And globalization, regardless whether you have a Republican or a Democrat in there, and even pro-Israel stance, like the importance of, you know, AIPAC and all that stuff, all of that moves forward regardless of if we have a Republican or a Democrat in power.
You had one of the articles with Clinton refers to Bush as his father, and like, you know, they're all family. And there was an old photo I put up, CBS News, 1983. It had Bush and Clinton together. And
this one, they had
the relationship way back. Yeah, there it is. Way back when, you know, and then the MENA, Arkansas, where Clinton was the governor of Arkansas. And that's where the cocaine was coming in. Barry Seal, the pilot.
Yep, that's right. Exactly. So it's like all tied together. These crime families have been working together forever to do it.
And they ran against each other. And then it was John Kerry and Bush that ran against each other that were both skull and bones.
Goldman,
so it's always
yep.
Controlled both sides.
Exactly. That's just it. And that's so, you know, that's what's so interesting about this. Hey, you know what? Let's go into the skull and bones issue too, because that's always fun. I did pull out a couple of clips. Sorry, my order is all jumping up. But here's one clip. That just details a little bit of it. And here's like John Kerry opening this and just talking about some of the importance, again, of kind of referencing what Herbert Walker did earlier in terms of a New World Order. And, of course, Order Out of Chaos is one of these classic Freemasonic slogans that you can see on some of their emblems and shields, and he refers to this directly in this clip.
We all, as a matter of the world order, such as it is, need to come together urgently in order to assert rule of law, human decency, and to make order out of places where there is chaos.
One of the first activities they participate in is called connubial bliss, or the sexual history. During CB, as it's called, each member must spend an evening standing in front of the other 14 bonesmen and recount his or her entire sexual and romantic history.
What dark secrets are Skull and Bones hiding? According to Ron Rosenbaum's new book, the Bonesmen practice a number of bizarre rituals, including one known as the sexual confessional.
And it happens every Sunday night, and they all gather, and one by one, one per week, they share the secrets of their sexual life.
Initiates must masturbate in a coffin while recounting their sexual exploits, for which they will be rewarded with a no-strings-attached gift of $15,000. Wow, masturbating in a coffin must have been pretty awkward for Bush if his dad was present. But hey, maybe we can expect some naked coffin selfies from him soon.
They then have to lie naked in a coffin. And, after masturbating in full view of the others, swear to never reveal their membership of the order. Always according to its critics, the number 322, the order's identifying number, hides a coded message. The 32 represents the year of its foundation, 1832. And the additional 2 stands for the fact that it's the second chapter within an international order.
Now, it's pretty interesting because no one knows this about presidents lying in a coffin, masturbating in front of each other. Like, these are, you know, some of the highest elite established politicians in the world. And they have these weird rituals. And I mean, for many of in the conspiracy, this is, of course, old news. But most people still, they don't know this kind of stuff. They don't know that this exists, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rituals just reminds me of, like, Freemasonry and Judaism. And remember, there was the student that asked the question to John Kerry. He says, and he got tased. He says, were you in Skull and Bones with George Bush, and why did you drop out of the race early, essentially? And then they tased him, and he's like, he's the don't tase me, bro. I had him on my show and interviewed him
a few
months back.
Oh.
Yeah, he's actually a Zionist. He's a Zionist.
Oh, and, really?
He's excited for the Third Temple, so that's why I had him on to discuss all those issues. Andrew Meyer, if anyone wants to see that.
Interesting, because you know, we can get into that now. Weaved into a lot of these, you know, documentaries about the Skull and Bones, and believe me, they are influential, but you know, Yale's secret societies are not the only ones. There's liberal versions of this too. But you know, the book and key, cap and gown, and you know, it just goes on and on in terms of, you know, these fraternities and stuff like that. And this being kind of a white man's domain is actually also going out the window as fewer and fewer white males are let into many of these Ivy League schools. So people shouldn't be, you know, surprised that this environment has started to change. And I don't think it's for the better either. I think it's just going to continue business as usual. But they talk about how it's like they're really fascists, and weaved into this is like the Nazi fetish and stuff like that. And you saw one of the Rosenbaums there, you know, writing a book on this, like telling us what the score is with Skull and Bones and stuff. Sometimes I wonder if we do get the full story on these kinds of things, and it's just like certain pieces of information that gets out to us that benefits us. Because I do become suspicious as soon as like CNN, you know, starts making these kinds of reports to tell us the truth about these matters. I kind of feel, you know what, here's one example of that, too. It's actually, I forget the author's name, but there was a woman wrote this book. She was at Yale, and she was supposedly giving us all the inside information about what Skull and Bones was. But I couldn't, I felt at the time, this is the lady here, I felt at the time that it's like, she's not giving us everything. It felt like it was an agenda weaved into an already existing agenda. Do you know what I mean?
Of course not. They're probably just doing damage control and telling us what they have to. And it's still this is kind of like a limited hangout, because, you know, this isn't the ultimate power isn't with Skull and Bones. It's just one of many factions. There's many underground secret oaths happening. And this is just one of them that is safe to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right. I think that there's a lot more to it than that. And if we know, I guess, about the name of the organization, and if we get this much information about something, like we did in 2004, now in hindsight, seeing how this is kind of not off topic, but it kind of takes it on a tangent a little bit, but it would be interesting to get your take on this. As I said, the Ivy League environment has changed so much, where basically white males are basically not like even existent on some of these campuses anymore. They don't end up in these positions. At the time in 2003 and 4 and 5, when this kind of information came out, it felt like it was done to like kind of begin to deconstruct that old guard of, you know, the same old kind of white males, right, that used to run the show. But it's like they don't anymore. It's basically like a lot of Jews and Asians now and women at these universities, you know.
Yeah, I haven't really kept close tabs on what's going on with the fraternities in America, but there's a lot of them. I would imagine that the most elite ones are still continuing on, you know, without skipping a beat. But do they have? Wasn't there in the news the other day there was like a bunch of students that were doing some kind of salute, and like they everybody was upset that they couldn't be punished. Did you see that story?
Yeah, I did see that. It was like a outrage, right? And nothing was explained why they did it. I think it was just a joke, was it not? As usual, they like did it as a big joke. It's not that there was like a whole Nazi faction of in the school or something like that, right? I mean, that would be kind of absurd.
I'm not sure, but that, if that's what's going on, I wouldn't be surprised that they're trying to get rid of the fraternity. Also, exactly. The kind of like the Me Too and the hazing, they've gone after that, but
yeah.
Not that they shouldn't. You know, they should. These rituals,
right.
and this stuff is pretty satanic, occultic type stuff.
I think it is, but I do see it just for the to add in an interesting kind of to splice the issue and making it a little bit more complicated. I do think it's interesting that these all male-dominated environments, you know, there is an old tradition in having male initiations and rituals and things that just pertaining to kind of, you know, yeah, the patriarchal culture, right, that you had. These people are the ones that became generals in militaries and high up in business and stuff like that. But that kind of environment has been, like, outlawed, you know what I mean? Males can't really have anything that's exclusively their own anymore. Women can, minorities can, and all that kind of stuff. But if you're a white male, you're out of the picture. And to a certain extent, they felt at the time that a lot of this information, why it came out, was to kind of begin that kind of onslaught that we've really seen in the last four or five years when it comes to like this anti-male, anti-white kind of sentiment. Mm-hmm. Again, I have no problem with them attacking something like Skull and Bones or these globalists or anything like that. So that's not what I'm saying. I'm not trying to justify it. But this issue that it's like, oh, males are bad, whites are bad, so let's just remove all these kinds of fraternities and their ability to network and have something that only belongs to themselves. You see what I'm saying?
Interesting. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that, that they're attacking the fraternities.
Yeah, definitely. Same with Freemasonry, really. Again, I don't like it at all, but it's like at some point they had to be open up to women and, you know, minorities, and they couldn't just have something which was exclusively theirs. And again, I don't think it's for the better. But one of the things we could talk about, Adam, is, you know, side note to the Skull and Bones, is, of course, that there was speculation. It hasn't really been, like, finalized or confirmed 100%. But Geronimo, which was one of the Indian leaders, or chief, I guess, his skull and bones is apparently what the society is named after. And Prescott Bush, which is George Bush's father, he is allegedly the one that actually broke into the tomb, I guess, to extract these bones. And, of course, with that came, you know, charges of racism and all that kind of usual stuff. But it's pretty interesting if that's true, that they actually went into his tomb, took all those bones and his skull, and then kind of, you know, using them. I don't know if it's an object of worship or whatever, or a sign of, like, domination or something like that. But it's kind of interesting, like, stories like that is coming out, and I don't know if it's true or not. What do you make of it?
It's quite the legend, you know, as legend tells it. I believe I saw a movie where, you know, there's lots of movies about Skull and Bones type plots, and there was the Linkletter or Stanley Kubrick movie, Eyes Wide Shut, kind of reminds me of the same stuff. But, yeah, weird skulls worshiping death. It's crazy. Prescott was involved with that, and he went on to Bush's dad, Prescott, did the business plot, was involved with the business plot, the coup to over Roosevelt, something else we're going to get to.
Interesting, yeah, because Prescott, you know, many people say that the Bush family has been known as, like, well, they're from Texas, and, you know, they're these, like, you know, gung-ho Republicans or whatever, but Prescott was born in Connecticut, and George Herbert Walker, he was born in, was it not Maine, but it was a similar the state up there, and then it was when George Bush was born, then that by that time they were down in Texas, but they kind of, it felt like they co-opted and kind of hijacked that, like, the Republican kind of standard, more conservative Republican thing, and kind of injected their own kind of upstate New York, Connecticut kind of way of looking at things, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, H.W. didn't, but 43, all right, George, his son, he was like a cowboy, you know, he pretended to be a cowboy.
It was like silly
all
because
half
it was
no
like a
cattle.
Game. Yeah, exactly. It was all half no cattle. But yeah, so, you know, you have the Skull and Bones thing, you have the CFR connection, the Rockefeller, you know, connection to these guys. There's one of the photos, by the way, of the Skull and Bones, and apparently the Skull and the Bones on that table is, you know, Geronimo's, you know, kind of allegedly. But looking at the mainstream coverage of this guy, I have seen very little criticism. You know, it's all like just praising this guy. Everything is fantastic. He did so many good things. There's an article talking about how he shaped modern Europe. He led, he made sure that the Soviet Union, that the collapse kind of happened. He broke up the Berlin Wall. They just, like, you know, oozed on praise onto this guy. He certainly doesn't deserve it, and I don't understand why even, like, Lefty Outlets, like the Daily Beast, goes on to praise this guy when he clearly did so many bad things and so much wrong and caused so much suffering with all the wars and stuff that he started, you know?
Yeah, I'm not surprised, though. The mainstream media always goes along with these big figureheads. They did the same thing with McCain. The worst ones usually get the most honor in the media, I'd say.
Yeah, there was an article of the Business Insider talking about before Bush, the second Bonesman to occupy the Oval Office. He was a pilot in World War II. He served as an ambassador to communist China, right? You said something, they helped to build up China. I wonder if these guys were behind selling out a lot of the secrets and stuff like that, too, because we saw an immense buildup of China, selling of industrial secrets, and eventually, I don't know if it's this early, but you saw things where basically American companies invited Chinese business people to come over to, like, car plants and stuff like that, and just like copy the whole thing, like get every inside information, all the knowledge that they wanted. They went back home and they started up these businesses. It must be because they had the New World Order in mind. They had this issue. We have to have industry over here. You know, like Asia is the production region. Europe is like the administrative region. America is the military region, or North America. Maybe South America is like the farming, area of the world or something. That's what I feel when you realize that they're just totally selling out their countrymen and their own nations like this.
Yeah, the Haaretz article that won't open, it's behind the paywall. It credits Bush for opening up the trade relationships for Israel with Russia and China, which ties into big to what's going on right now with the new Silk Road, the Belt and Road Initiative with Russia and China, with Israel at the helm, which that article we showed earlier, the Israel and the Unexpected New World Order, that's what that's talking about. How Israel's technology is going to be and their trade routes are going to be the hub for the new Silk Road.
Right, exactly, because Bush, of course, is a pro-Zionist, right? I mean, he's not a Nazi like those people are trying to claim when they do their Skull and Bones documentaries or their books about it or whatever. He's a total globalist. There's nothing nationalist with this guy whatsoever. But do you think that he was part of that plan way back, you know, to like ensure certain things strategically for Israel, that everything was kind of lining up for them so that they could become this kind of node point in a new, not only a new order, but it's like the industries and everything we talked about too, even with building up China and stuff like that, that Israel seems to be, you know, they're right there in the middle. If you actually look at a map, and you sent me one link to the Wikipedia page, right, that they even had this, what do they call it, a three-leaf map?
Clover, yeah, the clover map with Jerusalem in the center.
Let me pull that up here. We can show that too, because it shows, if you actually look at where Israel is located geographically, it's actually in a center position where you have Asia in one direction, you have Africa, you know, going down the Middle East, and then you have Europe going up in this direction, which means that strategically Israel is in a very important position when it comes to trade and stuff like that, right?
Exactly. And you asked, like, if it's possible, do I think that Bush back then was helping to set up this new Silk Road? And I think it's a really likely possibility because they've been planning this for so long. The rabbis were asking Rothschild to buy up the Temple Mount back in 1836.
Oh, shit.
Rabbis asking the Rothschilds, to buy the Temple Mount so that they could rebuild the temple. And then Ben-Gurion said in the 60s in his interview, the first prime minister of Israel says they want to have the Supreme Court of mankind and a world army and a federated union of continents, all prophesied by Isaiah. And now, right now, since Trump came in, they're like, they're going crazy about the third temple. They have him on Trump with Cyrus on the coin, the third temple on the back. All the rabbis in the Sanhedrin say that they have identified their Moshiach, their Messiah, who's going to reveal himself and then make peace in the Middle East and rule the world. I believe they may say that that's Kushner, Jared Kushner.
Yeah, that's right.
He comes from Chabad Lubavitch. So I'm not sure if Bush Sr. with this New World Order stuff was talking about the UN having a world order. That's what I used to think. But now with all this talk, you can see the World Net Daily article today saying that the Sanhedrin in Israel is going to create a new world body and a new international court like Ben-Gurion that's going to replace the UN.
Right, exactly. It's very interesting because that means that line would make sense, that they're seeking a legitimate United Nations, right, that they're too anti-Israel right now. And of course, it doesn't matter because the U.S. always veto things which goes against Israel, so they get their way anyway. But I think that they see it as a problem because in the UN, they have a little bit too much focus on Palestine and trying to kind of play an intermediary there or be, to a certain extent, a judge in the situation. Not that they can, but they're trying to very hard, and they just won't let that go, right?
It seems like the UN is functioning as like a real democracy, and they're not able to control it like they want to. So
right.
That's why they got to get rid of it and have the new one in Jerusalem.
But, you know, but at the same time, they're like they're halfway there in terms of they might not be like, okay, the center of the New World Order will be in Israel. Maybe they're not on that page, but they're definitely on the page that they're part of eradicating nations and stuff like that, right? I mean, look at the Global Compact that's going to be signed now coming up in, just about a week from now, the UN Global Compact for Migration. thankfully, a lot of countries have bailed out, but this is just straight out of a playbook of someone like Barbara Spector, where they're just going to create a legal framework for nations to open up their borders and also be legally obliged to crack down on people who criticize open borders and endless migration. I don't know if you heard about that, the hate speech issue, that's going to be like by decree by the United Nations, that they're going to say, like, you need to create a legal framework that basically clamps down on anyone that's criticizing population replacement.
I'm not surprised. They're using this Orwellian hate speech term, this subjective term that could be selectively enforced to usher in all this new censorship. And they combine the hate with the conspiracy theory and the anti-Semitism, and they're just able to get away with anything, it seems like. It's very concerning.
Absolutely. Let's play a couple of more clips here in terms of the... There was actually one guy that confronted Walker Bush on being a Zionist. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, usually nothing came out of it, but he actually walked into a pizza place in Houston and the Secret Service showed up, he says early in the video. And then Walker, George Bush steps in and he actually confronts the guys. So this is what came out of that.
Murderous Zionist piece of shit. You won't get your New World Order, guy. I can't, you, are you happy for the millions of deaths you're part of? People know. People are waking up to the reality of this, Mr. Bush, you piece of shit.
Listen, that's unnecessary.
No, it is not unnecessary. The guy is responsible for killing millions. If you knew anything about real history, fuck you! Fuck you.
Yeah, so that's what came out of that. It's pretty interesting, you know, but it's like at least someone caught him for like being a Zionist and not only just like some newer loader puppet, you know what I mean?
I've never seen that before. Thank you for showing me that. That was awesome. That guy is a hero.
I know.
That's how everybody should be. Everybody in the whole country, in the whole world should be like, after this latest Al Jazeera documentary that came out and all the spying and all the dirty tricks and bragging about controlling Congress and the think tanks and all the public discourse, like, that's how everybody should be acting.
Yeah, they have to say, they have to speak up about it. They have to say something when they see these people. But again, and that's what kind of a concerning thing about, too, the whitewashing of history, right? That this guy can go on and do all these evil, dirty deeds, and at the time when he has political opponents, at least on the, you know, even if it's just a semblance of, like, you know, trying to be, you know, anti-Bush or something in terms of the policies that it has, it's only by self-serving politicians that only says it so that, you know, they will gain power and come in or something like that, right? But what I'm saying is, all this kind of stuff is forgotten eventually, and when these guys do pass on, like we saw with McCain, they just like go overboard in the praise, and they just like there's no critical analysis of their life, and everything is just like they were great individuals, everything they did was wonderful, and it's like, wait a minute, these guys were like, they were running drugs, they were starting wars, they were lying to the American people, they were spying, they were selling them out, and it's like across the media there's like silence, it's like nothing, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the mainstream media that supported them to get into power and throughout the presidency they're the ones that are, you know, ingraining his legacy throughout time. It's not surprising that the media isn't going to be bashing honestly for all the stuff that we know about Bush. But it is sick that even the left goes along with it so much. Like,
they do.
It seems like it's so polarized and they hate each other so much. But, like, really when it comes down to it, they all love each other at the top and... And it's really a big joke, a big theater.
Yeah, exactly. Let me see if I can pull up. There was one clip there. Well, like this one here, right? How George Herbert Walker Bush made modern Europe, right? It's almost like that they're crediting him for being part of the Berlin Wall falling. And it's like, no, it was like a lot more to it than that. But also keep in mind this, right, that I hear this all the time, especially from, like, boomers and stuff. They're like, oh, my God, I never thought the wall would come down, and it's wonderful when they happen, and, oh, my God, the world is being, you know, kind of united and stuff like that. And although, obviously, I don't like to see, for example, Eastern Germany be controlled by communism or whatever, and it's great to see the collapse of the Soviet Union, but do keep in mind that the neocon movement came out of an anti-Stalinist kind of perspective, right? It was more Trotskyite. It was more, mm-hmm. you know, and this is what formed into the neoconservative domination of the American foreign policy, right, of bringing democracy to other countries, of nation building and this kind of stuff. And so I think it was important for these guys at the time to, like, make sure that the old enemies, like they had in the Cold War and stuff like that, to be dismantled so that the move towards globalization could begun, right? That's why we saw the wall collapsing. That's why Soviet Union fell apart. You know, that's why you saw unification of Germany and all these things that, like, Germany, after that point, became a really powerful partner in NATO, for example, which, of course, is, you know, kind of not anti-Soviet, but it turned anti-Russia eventually. And we still see that to this day, right? So they want this kind of unipolar, I guess it's the new term they call it, to unipolar world order, right? And these steps that, like, the Bushes are credited with are not because they have the German people at heart and want to create a better world for them. No, this is it's all because of globalism, Adam.
Yeah, and they're going to go down with a great legacy because history is written by the victors, and the same people are in charge now that were in charge while he was doing all of his dirty deeds. So nobody should be surprised that they're making him out to be a hero, just like they did McCain and all of our other great leaders.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the Daily Beast, who, like, otherwise writes an article about how awesome Antifa is and are totally supportive of them. They're like, oh, George W. Bush, he unified Germany and stuff. I just think it's bullshit, you know, to be honest. It's like he happened to be president when it happened, you know. But here's another example. Let's see if this is a good clip. Let's listen into this one.
We live in a peaceful, prosperous time, but we can make it better. For a new breeze is blowing, and a world refreshed by freedom seems reborn.
It was a time of big international changes. At the end of 1989, Bush sent troops to Panama to topple strongman Manuel Noriega.
The day of the dictator is over.
But there was an even more significant foreign development in that same period, the fall of the Berlin Wall, as communism started to lose its hold in Eastern Europe. President Bush was surprisingly laid back in his response.
You don't seem elated, and I'm wondering if you're thinking
I'm
of
elated,
the problem.
I'm elated, and it's not an emotional kind of guy.
Well, how elated are you?
I'm very pleased.
I'm very pleased. But yeah, these are the kind of reports that we get. And again, it's not really deep dive. I forget, this was like CBS or something like that, or NBC, I forget. But there's no like deep dive into like just the massive scandal of like the Iran-Contra and how he was behind it and how he, you know, again, pardoned all these people and nothing about the drugs, you know, underneath, like the undercurrent to all of this and be, you know, selling drugs and stuff and making money on this kind of stuff. It's amazing. It's just a whitewash.
We all know now that like the war on drugs was a huge disaster, and all the wars with Iraq in the Middle East have all been a mistake. So, but nope, it's everything he did was great. He's a hero. Let's make a statue.
Exactly. He's going to get roads named after him and universities. Or, well, I mean, he's a white male after all. We'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to follow this going forward. But one thing we can actually touch on, one point here, and we'll take a break after that, but the Kuwait war, Operation Desert Storm, right? This is a big issue of what happened. And one of the ways that they achieved this is to use the incubator lie, as it has been known, consequently. A daughter of the ambassador, the Kuwait ambassador to the U.S., that made this testimonial in front of, it was actually a human rights commission, and this triggered a lot of the responses to America kind of going at war with Iraq and you know, helping the Kuwaitis in a way. But if you haven't seen it, take a look at this here.
While I was there, I saw the Iraqi soldiers come into the hospital with guns. They took the babies out of the incubators. Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor.
I myself buried 14 newborn babies that had been taken from their incubators.
Kids in incubators, and they were thrown out of the incubators so that Kuwait could be systematically dismantled.
Yeah, systematically dismantled. And he just goes on to repeat this stuff. Her name was Nayara, I guess, and she was actually related even to the Kuwaiti royal family, this girl that was doing this in the beginning. And her father was present at this Human Rights Commission, the testimony, and no proof for the claims were presented at the time. Everyone just took it at face value, like, oh my God, here's a girl. She couldn't possibly lie, right? And it turned out it was even manufactured by a PR firm, the whole damn thing. And it was actually one guy from Harper's Magazine, believe it or not, this total junk today. But this is the good old days when journalists actually did their job, right? They actually investigated. They went out to look for claims. And I think about a year later, this came out that it was all a lie. But here's just a short clip from the guy who kind of exposed this. Check this out.
So So I set out to try to find out, like any reporter does, and I started asking questions, and I finally heard a rumor that Naira was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador. So I used an old reporter's trick. I called up the embassy, and I said, Naira did a terrific job at the Human Rights Caucus, and I think her father must be very proud of her. And doesn't she deserve her place in history? And the ambassador's secretary said to me, you're not supposed to know that. No one's supposed to know she's the ambassador's daughter.
There were those who did know. Congressman Tom Lantos, co-chairman of the Congressional Caucus, knew, but he told no one, not even his co-chairman, Congressman John Porter.
I did not know of it until about 10 days ago when it was brought up to me by somebody in the media.
We spoke to Congressman Lantos through a telephone hookup to California. He says he kept Naira's identity secret to protect her family from Iraqi reprisals.
Do you believe that she saw, witnessed, what she says she witnessed?
I have never a personal knowledge of what a witness tells us. And at the moment, I understand some groups questioned her testimony. If in fact that is the case, if in fact her testimony should be inaccurate, then I believe we are owed an apology. I am owed an apology. The Congressional Human Rights Caucus is owed an apology. I haven't the faintest idea at this stage whether she was telling the truth or not.
Today on Capitol Hill.
Anyway, that's an interesting tale right there, too, because Lantos, he's actually a Holocaust survivor. You know, he's actually very pro-Israel for obvious reasons and stuff like that, too. But it's interesting that, you know, he actually kept all of the secret and allowed it to go through. It's almost like that even that early foreign policy that America eventually developed of, like, being Israel first and looking out after their interests was being initiated with that first operation, Desert Storm, you know, when they went into Kuwait and tried to take out Iraq. And I don't know if it was because they weren't successful or because they just didn't want to go longer, but Walker Bush, he, of course, didn't follow through on that and toppled Saddam. It was not until his son came in later in 2003 that it went in and actually took care of business, you know. But it was like, you can see that as a follow through history. It was like either they failed when he was president and they just picked up where his son, or that was part of the plan for some reason. I don't know. But what do you think of that?
I just put up a video today called the Zionist Crusade Exposed. And it goes into how Bush finished the job with Saddam. And you got to remember that back then, Iraq and Israel were really big enemies, and Iraq was a big threat to Israel. So the Gulf War was a huge benefit for Israel. And then, of course, Netanyahu says that the war in Iraq was very good for Israel. 9/11 was very good for Israel. And it was the bad intelligence that the United States got from Israel that got us into Iraq. That's Fox News and mainstream media admit that Israel gave us the bad intel. And then remember the anthrax letters also? That's what got us into Iraq. They connected. They said that the anthrax was coming out of Iraq, and it said death to America, death to Israel. So that's you can look at that as like a signature.
Yeah, and that's very interesting because it was I found this too when Walker is talking about kind of the motives why they went into Iraq and or Kuwait, mm-hmm. I guess, to push out the Iraqi forces, but how they saw themselves at the time of what they needed to do, what objectives they needed to be achieved, right? Because remember, again, Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Well, but back in 93, when the Operation Desert Storm was going, they supposedly were already taking care of all of this. So check this clip out here.
As I report to you, air attacks are underway against military targets in Iraq. We are determined to knock out Saddam Hussein's nuclear bomb potential. We will also destroy his chemical weapons facilities. Much of Saddam's artillery and tanks will be destroyed. Our operations are designed to best protect the lives of all the coalition forces by targeting Saddam's vast military arsenal. Initial reports from General Schwarzkopf are that our operations are proceeding according to plan. Our objectives are clear. Saddam Hussein's forces will leave Kuwait. The legitimate government of Kuwait will be restored to its rightful place. And Kuwait will once again be free. Iraq will eventually comply with all relevant United Nations resolutions, and then, when peace is restored, it is our hope that Iraq will live as a peaceful and cooperative member of the family of nations, thus enhancing the security and stability of the Gulf.
There you have it. I mean, listen to those words there. Like, okay, so they took care of the chemical weapons. All of that should have been done at that stage, but it wasn't. It was just a big lie. It was based on a lie. They didn't take care of the business that they did at the time. But it's like you can hear that, like, the world, the internationalist, globalist kind of sentiments that is like, if you have a nation that deviates, they're going to be knocked back in place. And they always use this issue, well, he's a dictator and he's a bad guy, right? We saw that in Libya. We saw that later with Saddam. We see that now in Syria, you know, with Assad and stuff like that. And look at the chaos, Adam, that this has created in its wake. I mean, I really see the Kuwait war here as kind of the initiation of that, like, total chaos in the Middle East that has not only led to, you know, the chaos, but even the migrant waves that we've seen consequently. Eventually, I mean, the Iraq war, they open up for ISIS to be there as a force, and America sponsoring them as well. It's just gotten worse and worse and worse.
So many millions have died for this Middle East Zionist agenda to take down the powerful countries so that Israel can rise up as a superpower in the region and fulfill all their end times prophecies of ruling with the Moshiach. It's like, how much blood has to be spilt? And it's all American blood. They're using America's military power to do it. We're the ones with all the veterans that are committing suicide. We're the ones that are $20 trillion in debt. And I'm surprised we're not in more wars yet. I feel like Iran is probably coming, definitely, if not in this term, in the next with Trump, if there will be a next term.
Yeah, but they've been talking about that for forever. I mean, remember the Wesley Clark, remember the line that he talks about? Was it five nations in 5 years or something, right? The plan, he goes through them all. And it's basically just Iran left on that list. And although Wesley Clark's admission from what he had received from a top-down order from Pentagon, and this is when, you know, 9/11 had happened and all of that kind of stuff, he's talking about these admissions, although that plan has not panned out as fast as they wanted to, it has panned out.
Exactly. Yeah, Netanyahu was just at the, I believe it was at the UN, saying that they have all this evidence that Iran is breaking their nuclear agreement and they're doing all this bomb making and stuff. So he'll never stop. He said the same thing about Iraq, and he promised that Iraq would be better afterwards, just like Bush did. And of course, Iraq's been a mess ever since. The whole Middle East is.
It's just this flip. This is what you get with globalists, right? They manipulate you with good words and stuff like that. Same thing with the Tom Lantos guy. He's actually a Hungarian Jewish guy. And he's been sitting on these human rights commissions and stuff like that. And this is how they hoodwink people. They say that it's for a good cause. We have to stand up for human rights. We have to do all these things. And we have to, you know, ultimately invade countries and dispossess people, which causes them to just mass migrate out of these regions up to, like, Western Europe and stuff like that, which I'm against. But no one is talking about, like, well, let's end these wars and make sure that these people can return back home again. No one is even talking about this. Instead, we get the United Nations like, oh, just open your borders and let them all in. We need to free up this area for, like, Israel or something like that. I don't know what the hell the plan is, you know?
Yeah, we're almost at the point where just talking about ending the wars, people call you anti-Semitic. I put up a video on YouTube that says anti-war author or something, and then it had a little warning below it, you know, or it got limited stated for hate speech violations, our favorite term.
Amazing. Exactly. It's like, well, are you anti-war? Well, what do you have against Israel? Why are you anti-Semitic? You know, yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Or it was like, oh, are you implying that there's a plan behind these wars? And it's like, no, well, I'm not saying that. You're interpreting that. That's your take on that. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to take a short break in a little bit, and we'll come back. There's a lot of these stories that has been coming out in the wake of us doing our other interview as well with you, which was more focused on the Third Temple and kind of this overarching plan of how they're seeing to build things up. And I want to talk a little bit more about that, how things are going, you know, with the Sanhedrin. And, you know, you mentioned that briefly. We can get into some of that. And also the Monsanto, the Bush was part of the Monsanto deregulation. That's gold. I never heard of that before. We're going to play a clip showing more of that. And we have to talk, of course, about the involvement in 9/11, because that's really what triggered all of this, right? Not all of it, but it was stepped into high gear, right? You had the Project for the New American Century ahead of that time. Then you, after that time, you had the Patriot Act. You have all these reforms of travel. You had TSA coming into effect. And all these things just transformed in America and even around the world, frankly, after this event.
The Bush-Saudi relationships.
Exactly, showing that there was ties. They knew the Bin Laden family. You know, there's all this dirt there. So there's like, it's just conspiracy wherever you look, basically, with these guys. You know, but Adam, before we take just a short little break here and continue in part two, tell us about No More News. You're still up. Thank God you haven't been you haven't received a strike yet, so you can still live stream and doing your shows right as you normally do them.
Yeah, I've been keeping it clean, keeping it classy. I got a couple playlists. If you're new to the channel, Zionism Exposed, and if you scroll down a bit, there's a Jewish Temple Prophecy are the playlists. That's the one I just put up today, the Zionist Crusade Exposed. The Jewish Temple Prophecy playlist. Start with some of those if you haven't seen those. Trump, Gangsta's Paradise, The Truth About Anti-Semitism, my mini documentary about the new crackdown on Public Enemy Number One. I do investigations into 9/11 truth, exposed Zionism, a playlist with exposing Alex Jones and InfoWars, like when I was on last time a couple months ago. And yeah, appreciate you guys to come check it out.
Check it out, folks. A lot of good videos there, a lot of good stuff, and you learn more about the kind of stuff that we're talking about today. In terms of the agenda, kind of behind the scenes, and some factions of globalism, I guess, that many people don't touch is kind of a third rail in that regard in terms of criticizing Israel, and that's become a big no-no, obviously, on YouTube. Even the mellowest versions of it, even like to a certain extent, mainstream organized stuff like the BDS movement and stuff like that, they're cracking down on all of that stuff.
Absolutely. The journalist was just fired from CNN for speaking up for
Lamarck, what is his name again? It's funny because Ann Coulter had made a fun tweet. She said, well, that settles the debate, settles that issue of, this myth about the Jews controlling the media or something like that, right?
Yeah. So, great tweet, yeah. Ann Coulter, on that one, yeah. She's a Zionist, though, I'm pretty sure, so I don't know.
I think so, but there's some things, I think she sees some things, and she just can't stand the double standards. Yeah, I remember during, State of the Union addresses, even when Trump was doing it, she was tweeting, like, what the hell? Like, how many times is he going to talk about Israel? Like, talk about America, talk about the wall. And, you know, I think she knows some of this stuff, actually. And she is on it, but she doesn't harp on it every single time. You know what I mean?
She did do those tweets saying, like, yeah, how many? Yeah, there's such a small percentage, and they were just catering to them so much. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, check it out, folks. No More News with Adam Green does a lot of good work over there. Subscribe to the channel. We'll have all the links down below. But we're just going to take a short break here, and then we're going to continue in part two with Adam. Much more to get into, much more interesting things to discuss with Adam. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Generals gathered in their masses. Like witches at black masses, evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction, in the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning, death and hatred to mankind. Wash my hands. Oh, Lord, yeah. this world stops turning. Ashes where the body's burning. No more war pigs have the power. And as God has struck the hour, day of judgment, God is calling. On the knees, the war pigs crawling, begging mercies for the sin.